Finance Committee is called to order. It's March 26th. We're in room 107, and we are beginning our testimony today with our chair, Senator Wieger, with the Senate File 991, The Race to Reduce.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate File 991 addresses water conservation efforts. As you know, we have a significant challenge in Minnesota in addressing water supply, the shortage, the sustainability of water. In fact, last session, we formed a new legislative commission on water resources. It's a bipartisan group, and it just started this year in response to the issue. We in my district know this very clearly in terms of White Bear Lake, particularly. There has been a big issue that you've read about on the lowered lake level at White Bear Lake. There's been a lot of study that's been going on as to the causes. But the bottom line, as we look at any long-term strategy, is we need to conserve more water. And in fact, a court recently had directed many of the communities in the north and east metro area to step up conservation efforts. And who better to be involved in water conservation efforts than the schools in promoting conservation efforts for the next generation? And this bill is designed to do that, to promote water conservation efforts and tying it in with schools. And the proposal I have here today is supported by school districts in White Bear Lake and Matamidi area. It's supported by area mayors, by the Chamber of Commerce, property owners in the area. This is a significant issue, as I said, in my area, but also throughout the state, and it's our hope that we might be able to replicate some of the ideas and what's implemented for other districts throughout the state. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to call on my first witness, Dr. Michael Lovett, the Superintendent of Schools for White Bear Lake, and we're looking just overall for our presentation to be about 12 to 13 minutes.
Thank you, Senator Wieger, and compliment you on your getting your witnesses up there and setting the example for the rest of us today. Superintendent Lovett.
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Wieger, members of the committee. As school superintendent of the White Bear Lake Area Schools, we represent students coming from all or part of 10 different Northeast Metro communities, almost 9,000 students in all. One of the things that we have in common is an understanding of the importance of water conservation, and we appreciate the opportunity today to testify on behalf of what is really a model water conservation education bill. One of the things that students know by third grade is the concept of a closed basin lake. That is, they realize that White Bear Lake, unlike many lakes that we're familiar with, is not, the lake level is not determined by the watershed, but by the upward pressure of the underlying aquifer. And they recognize that the aquifer is being depleted more quickly than rainwater and natural causes can fill it. And so they realize that, well, it's a visible problem in our community. The issue of the underlying aquifer is a major challenge and problem for all of Minnesota. The White Bear Lake Area Schools, like other community school districts and businesses, have made a commitment to reduce and to monitor our water use. That's a commitment we've made in conjunction with the efforts of the White Bear Lake Chamber of Commerce. But perhaps more importantly, in terms of legacy, is the work that we're doing in partnership with H2O for Life and Race to Reduce to look at water conservation with our students and make sure that their understanding leaves a legacy for the next generation. Now, we can't have 9,000 students come up here and tell their story. So we've chosen one, Sophie Davis, a sixth grade student at Sunrise Park Middle School, who will tell her story. Sophie.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi.
Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning.
Welcome to our committee.
Thanks. Hi. My name is Sophie Davis, and I'm a sixth grader at Sunrise Park Middle School. Last year, my school, Matoska International Elementary in White Bear Lake, partnered with Obuile Primary School and Irumu College Secondary School in Uganda for the H2O for Life program. Our job was to help raise awareness and money about kids that don't have access to fresh water. Our school wanted to participate in H2O for Life because we think something needs to be done for the kids who walk miles every day just to get fresh water when kids in America complain about walking to the closest sink. Me and some other fifth graders at Matoska's job was to plan on how to raise money and get everyone super excited about helping the kids in Uganda. We met every Wednesday with our awesome gym teacher, Mr. Butters, to organize details, write lessons, skits, and plan an assembly. The assembly was used to help the other students learn about what we were doing as a school and what they could do to help. Each student was to do extra jobs around the house or neighborhood to try to earn $7 to meet our school's goal. Anyone who raised money, even if it was only a penny, got to write their name on our school's rainbow and add it to our school's rainbow. At the assembly, there was a flash mob about how anything is possible, even raising enough money to help the schools in Uganda. And we did it. We raised over $4,000 to help kids get fresh drinking water. It inspired so many kids at our school that anything really is possible. My favorite part is when we took action. My school walked from our gymnasium to White Bear Lake carrying 2 to 4 liters of water to symbolize what kids in Uganda have to do every day. My job was to encourage, help, and lead my school with our walk. Once we got there, we dumped all of the water into White Bear Lake so it wasn't wasted and helped to raise the lake. Because of learning about the programs like H2O for Life or Race to Reduce, now I'm much more aware of wasted water. Before, I really didn't think about how I can go to any sink and get water at any time. Now I try to save water by simply taking shorter showers and turning off the water when I brush my teeth. I would like other kids in our community to know about the schools that don't have fresh water and about the lake. I notice more when people waste water and think about it every day. That's why I think other people should be educated about how much water we waste. Maybe then it will not only make a difference in our community, but for the kids in Uganda too. Our school proved we could be open-minded, risk-takers, communicators, caring, and knowledgeable about the world, and that even one penny or one drop of water can make a difference.
Thank you, Sophie. You're setting a good example, like the chair this morning. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members.
Mr. Butters?
Yes. Good morning. My name is Ben Butters, and it was my great privilege to be Sophie's gym teacher, like she said, for 5 years at Matoska. I have a very a great responsibility of teaching young people how to be lifelong learners who take action, and Sophie is a great example of this. I believe there are three main factors to reach this goal of developing lifelong learners who take action in their community. The first is engaging students in meaningful connections to what they are learning to real life. The Race to Reduce program engages students in real life experiences that are connected to what students are learning in school about water, the water cycle, and how to conserve water. The second factor is empowering students to be leaders. When I sat down with Sophie and 7 other students from Matoska in the fall of 2013, I asked them what they wanted to do, and they responded, "We want to help others in need, teach our students how to care for our water, educate our students on the water crisis in the world and in our local community, and then enlist the action of everyone to help." We met every Wednesday for an entire year learning about local water issues, global water issues. Sophie and her classmates strategized on how we can empower everyone to help those in need and how to take action to conserve water. Race to Reduce will provide more opportunities to empower students to be leaders in water conservation in school, at home, and in their communities. And the third factor, I believe, is educating action. Action occurs in a cycle. Students choose, make a choice, they act on it, and then they reflect on that choice, that action. Here's one example. My choice, I choose to conserve water. My action, I don't let the water run when I brush my teeth. This is the student's example. I wonder if my parents let the water run when they're brushing their teeth. You can see how this action cycle continues to create action, and it develops ownership. in students' learning. Race to Reduce will educate students how to take action and take ownership, becoming responsible stewards of our greatest resource, water. Sophie is a great example of what kids can do when they are engaged in meaningful connections and empowered to be leaders, and they're educated on how to take action. Through Race to Reduce, more and more students will be engaged, empowered, and educated on how to conserve water and help others in need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butters. Next, we have Amy Crawford and Paul Steinhauser.
Easier.
Sure.
I'm a tall person trying to squeeze into a spot here.
Welcome to the committee.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Senator Wieger, and good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of this bill. My name is Amy Crawford, and I'm the Executive Director of H2O for Life. And our organization is based in White Bear Lake, and our mission is to educate, engage, and inspire young people to be the next generation of global citizens. We involve K-12 students in service learning opportunities to learn about and take action about the global water crisis, but also the local water issues that we're here today to talk about. So H2O is the lead implementing organization for Race to Reduce, just as context. Our community campaign goal is to decrease water use in the community surrounding White Bear Lake by 17% over the next 3 years. With the support of a Minnesota Green Corps member, we have been able to develop activities, lesson plans, and launch after-school service learning opportunities, club activities for students in both the White Bear Lake and Matamidi school districts. Students have been learning about the water cycle, tracking their personal water usage, and had an opportunity to build model aquifers and watersheds. Race to Reduce has been a great success to date. We've reached over 1,300 students, 220 adults, plus an additional 260 educators. So now, based on this positive experience in working with both school districts, we're ready to solidify this model so that it can be embedded into the current curriculum and that we can expand this work to all of the communities that are served by both White Bear Lake Schools and the Matamidi School District, including Birchwood, Hugo, Badness Heights, White Bear Township. And in year two, we plan to expand Race to Reduce to serve the communities of Shoreview and North St. Paul. So some of the activities and investments that would be made that would benefit teachers and students as a result of this bill would include developing and disseminating water conservation modules that are aligned with current curriculum, expanded in-service training for teachers, and supporting a comprehensive evaluation of the program's impact and recommendations as far as how we can take this model, which has been cost-effective and very innovative, to other interested school districts. So as you heard today, it's not only about increasing youth awareness about their own water use, but long-term we would like to have them change their habits and behaviors around water for the future so that we all benefit. The other aspect about Race to Reduce I want to emphasize is that we've been successful because we have the buy-in and support of all the key stakeholders in the community. As Senator Wieger mentioned, from the elected officials, from school district leaders, from the business community, and other funders, we feel our success in engaging multiple stakeholders in a coordinated effort is a strategy worth sharing and replicating to other interested communities that are also dealing with water issues. So the state's investment in helping us expand Race to Reduce will not only bring positive returns for these communities, but will help protect the water resources for future generations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Mr. Steinhauser.
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Paul Steinhauser. I'm the director of Race to Reduce. Let me real briefly let you know what that is. It's this collaboration that I won't go through the whole list of everybody that's part of it, but we also have a direct line of communication into the DNR and the Met Council. And Race to Reduce really has three facets. The first facet is about in-school hands-on education. It's all about the bill that is here before you. The second facet is water conservation education for the rest of us. And there's countless water gallons to be saved without any lifestyle change, unless you think a lifestyle change is watering your lawn before 9 in the morning. The third facet is about upgrading our homes and our businesses to 21st century water-saving devices. And again, there are millions of gallons to be saved without any lifestyle style changes at all. So what I want to wrap by emphasizing is that we're all familiar with the $300, $400, $500 million fixes. Every gallon that's saved, that is, every gallon that's not pumped from the aquifer, saves everybody money on water and may even reduce the size and cost of whatever other solutions are eventually implemented. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Steinhauser. Senator Wieger, any other comments or testimony?
Madam Chair, that completes our presentation and would be open for any questions.
Let me start with one that's really bothering me a lot. When I turn the faucet on to get warm water, I want warm water, and I have to let it run for far too long. So what do I do about that?
May I touch on it?
Sure.
Right. In new construction today, we've learned that you can have a much thinner water pipe than we do today, and it'll get the water there using two-thirds less water to get the hot to you, and you'll still have the pressure you need. Retrofitting, you know, that's a whole nother challenge.
Thank you. We have a new home.
Oops.
Any other questions from members? Senator McLend. Sorry about
Thank
that.
You. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious. It looks like you've got the grant funding split up amongst the two school districts and the H2O for Life. Is there a coordinator that's going to oversee the implementation, an overall coordinator that's going to kind of coordinate the overall implementation with the schools and your organization? Or?
Well, the H2O for Life and the school programs is part of the Race to Reduce umbrella, and all of the school programs will be run by Amy Crawford. And yet she sits on the steering committee with the rest of us who are responsible for the second and third facets of Race to Reduce that I already described. Does that help?
Senator Wicklund,
Ms. Crawford.
Mm-hmm. So we're the home base for Race to Reduce, and so we work collaboratively with Matamidi School District and White Bear Lake Area School District, and hopefully we'll get a renewal of a Green Corps member to also assist our team going forward. But this is a collaborative effort, but we are the overall coordinating body that will make sure that the project stays on time and that will be the home for the comprehensive evaluation effort as well.
And Madam Chair, there's a built-in evaluation, a number of objectives that are measurable, that we would expect that, and that'll be a part of the project. So, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 991 be recommended for possible inclusion in the E-12 finance omnibus bill.
All those in favor of that motion by Senator Wieger, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Thank you, all of you testifiers, but especially you, Sophie. Because of you being in the sixth grade, you will be around for a long time. And hopefully you can influence the adults in the community as well as the students that are your colleagues right now. So thank you for being here with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, we have Senator Rest with Senate File 1110. Good morning,
Madam Chair,
Senator Rest.
May I
take up 1308 first. I think it'll be very short.
Okay. Senator Rest wishes to take up Senate File 1308, which is number 4 on the agenda.
Madam Chair, Senate File 1308 is the what we in the Tax Committee refer to as the Public Finance Bill. It's where we gather, it's a bill that is brought to us by public finance professionals or different kinds of local government entities to address public finance issues. And it goes in the tax bill as an article. This year, the first section of the bill does have to do with education, and so the committee requested that it come here. I can go through all the provisions of the bill which do not have to do with education or just deal with the first section.
Senator Rest, why don't we just deal with the section that impacts this committee?
With regard to the first section, which does deal with school districts and the Minnesota Department of Education, there was in the last couple of years when people were dealing with the lease levy, there was a review and comment period and a requirement, and then that was removed and nothing really put in its place. And so what this bill, what this provision does is to, for the schools, to state the conditions for the MDE, for the department, to grant permission for the lease levy. Now, the conditions that are listed in here are current practice. It's what they're doing, and the request is to codify the current practices. And we do have a, with regard to this section, we do have a an author's amendment is the A1.
Senator Rest, I'm told that you, Section 2 also would pertain to education, so if you would go through that. And I think we need one more member for a quorum.
Madam Chair, as part of my author's amendment, it will be to delete Section 2.
Members, you have that on your mind. Okay.
Section 7 and 8. In discussions with MMB, those are not necessary.
So, page 1, line 23. You're deleting some of the information there, right? No, you're adding.
No, we're adding additional information mm-hmm. shall be provided for consideration upon the request of the commissioner.
And if you want to delete the other sections, it would have to be an oral amendment. And again, as I said, we...
2, 7, and 8.
Sections 2, 7, and 8.
And that leaves the remaining Section 1 in the dealing with education.
So we have the amendment before us now. You have someone here to testify. We'll take it up as soon as we get a quorum.
Okay. I have an attorney from Dorsey and Whitney who is with the Institute of Public Finance who can speak to Section 1.
Mr. Canova.
Good morning. Section 1 is a change that we proposed as an Institute of Public Finance of industry professionals, underwriters, bond counsel, which I am at Dorsey and Whitney, municipal underwriters and the like, basically to codify current practice of the Department of Education. When the review and comment statute was amended last year, it created an exception from review and comment for any projects that are funded wholly by lease levy. So this application requirement that's in the current version of 126C40, as written, it requires an application. That application requirement was satisfied by the review and comment requirement. Because there's no longer a review and comment application, there is no longer an application to satisfy this statute. So as we're going and giving a legal opinion and the like on whether the school districts have complied with state law, it's difficult to satisfy an application requirement. So we simply revised the statute to reflect current Department of Education practice of receiving information about the lease project, and with the new amendment to the amendment, we've talked with the Department of Education, and they've added that additional language to get additional information. And really, it's just going to reflect the current practice of the department to seek information that they need before granting permission to levy. And then it would remove the formal requirement of an application while keeping still a permission requirement.
Further comments? Now, I believe we had a quorum at one point. We have members that are multitasking going into other meetings, but we could formally adopt the A1 amendment. I believe it has not been moved by the author Senator Jensen.
That would certainly be my request.
Okay. Senator Jensen moves the A1, and was there an oral amendment?
Yes.
And it's included.
Includes deleting sections 2, 7, and 8.
Thank you, Senator Rest. On Senator Jensen's motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Carry.
Mr. Chairman, the rest of the revisions are in the jurisdiction of the Tax Committee, and so I would appreciate a motion to move this bill up to full finance so that it can get to the Tax Committee for consideration.
Okay. Is there anyone that would like to address Senate File 1110 as amended?
1308.
Excuse me. 1308 as amended. If not, Senator Bonner moves that Senate File 1308 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to Finance. Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Carried. Thank you, Senator Rest.
Thank you.
And we'll go next to Senate File 1110, Senator Rest. And we invite your testifiers to join you.
Mr. Chairman and members, in 1990, an organization called WEMEP, the West Metro Education Program, was passed in legislation by this body and signed in House and signed into law to set up inter-district schools, two of them, as a matter of fact, one in Minneapolis for K-3 and 9-12, and one in ended up being one in Crystal for the middle school years. The buildings were finalized for those programs in 1998 and 2000, respectively, and have had students from any number of school districts. I have the list here. Brooklyn Center, Columbia Heights, Eden Prairie, Edina, Hopkins, Minneapolis, St. Anthony, New Brighton, St. Louis Park, Richfield, Robbinsdale, and Wayzata. The mission of WEMET, as I understand it, is threefold. One was integration. A second one was equity. And then a third one was emphasis on interdisciplinary approaches to a comprehensive education with a special focus on the arts. And they have been amazingly successful in that. However, some of the demographics at the time, some 20 years ago, I guess, have now changed. And some of those suburban districts look as much like Minneapolis as Minneapolis looks like itself. And so WEMEP has been having a number of discussions, well, for several years, but has culminated in a unanimous decision to, for those two school buildings, to come to the legislature and ask that they be conveyed to the building in downtown Minneapolis, only public school in downtown Minneapolis, be conveyed to the Minneapolis School District, and the middle school, the Fair School, which actually was the Fair School before it became Weemap's Fair School. It was an elementary school which was demolished, named after Jeanette Fair, who was a prominent person in our communities in the early days. So that decision and request of the legislature has been building for a number of years, and final action was taken on it earlier this year. All of the superintendents involved, all of the WEMAP board members have voted for this plan, and we are here today to talk to you about it. The first section of the bill deals with the Fair School downtown, and it is an authorization for that school to be conveyed to Minneapolis. The subdivision 2 of section 1 is the authorization for the Fair School in Crystal to be conveyed to Robbinsdale School District 281. I consider actually the guts of the bill, however, to address, you know, what is it that needs to be addressed in order to accomplish that conveyance that continues to satisfy the students, their families, the teachers, and the communities, all of whom that are involved, that have been involved in this initiative since 1990 and for the last 15 years or so in the actual school building themselves. So, and I'll just, it's the same for both, but just to go through those conditions, the transition conditions, and their importance. The first one is student enrollment, that if a student is enrolled in the Fair School this year, that and they are accepted for enrollment the next year, they may continue to enroll regardless of which school district would be their home district determined by their home address. I think that the parents of students that are in these other districts and in the Robbinsdale district and Minneapolis school district need to be reassured by WEMAP that the inner district character of these two schools will be continued and assured. I think that's very important, and I hope that the testifiers will speak to that. Secondly, the various revenues that that are used to support these efforts, compensatory literacy and alternative compensation revenue, would be continued under MDE. And since this is, an inter-district school, that transportation for these students would be made under the same conditions that they're made now, and they would not change. And then, of course, there's an effective date statute. But I welcome your support for this initiative, which affects at least of the people who are here, certainly Senator Bonoff's, the districts that she represents, and obviously the ones I represent. We have been told by MMB that because this program was started with general obligation bonds of the state, that in order for the approval to be legitimate, if you will, that the bill needs to move forward, Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, to the full Finance Committee, and from there to the Capital Investment Committee, because it will require in the Senate 41 votes to pass. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I would invite the testifiers from WEMEP, from District 281, my superintendent, and many, I'm sorry, and General Counsel for the Minneapolis Public Schools to testify to the bill, and I hope again that they will respond particularly to the issue of student enrollment.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Excellent background, and this has been vetted very thoroughly at the local level, and I know there's been a great deal of information shared with members prior to. As we proceed with testimony, we'll maybe focus more on if there's questions and use
sure.
time that way. And I'm not aware, but I want to check, is there anyone opposed to the proposed measure here? So keeping that in mind, we'll proceed with testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on behalf of Senate File 1110, the West Metro Education Program Fair School Buildings Conveyance. A lot of my talk here today, I think a lot of it has been covered, so I'm going to go really fast through that part so I can get to some of the others that I think are very pertinent and important. But 20 years ago, WEMEP was formed as one of three integration districts in the metro, with a joint powers board made up of the 11 districts that you heard about earlier.
Excuse me, Superintendent Lester, just for the tape and viewing audience.
Oh, yes, I forgot. My name is Keith Lester. I'm interim superintendent in West Metro Education Program.
Thank you.
Okay. So plans for two new integrated schools were developed and implemented. However, the member districts of WEMEP looked very different than they do now. Minneapolis was racially isolated, and the rest of the WEMEP districts had very small populations of color. So integration was the goal of having a school in Minneapolis and in Crystal, and it made sense for a plan to integrate the schools and for the other districts. Both of the schools, as you heard, are fine arts integration magnet schools. The Fair School Crystal, just so you know, has grades 4 through 8 and is currently serving 433 students. Downtown, it's a different enrollment. It's a K-3 and 9-12. K-3 has 195 students, and 9-12 enrolls 312 students. 944, I think. Fast forward to today, and you'll see the member districts now are, as you just heard, as or more diverse than Minneapolis. Integration is still an issue, but it is every bit as important between member districts as it is between Minneapolis and the member districts. Further, the new integration law calls for more of an emphasis on student achievement. Not that we weren't working on student achievement, but as we move forward, we need to continue to be conscious of an integration, but also how are we going to close that gap. The model for magnet schools for WEMEP no longer serves the greater needs of a very different population at this very different time. The WEMEP Joint Powers Board informally discussed, again, as you heard, on and off for over a number of years. I was at Brooklyn Center for 8 years, and I don't think a year went by that we didn't talk about should we be running the schools or should we be focusing on the other things that we're good at, professional development and student programming. But they got serious about it about 18 months ago and said, we need to dig deeper. We need to make a decision about the role that the schools are playing in instruction and achievement. For 100,000 students in our member districts versus 940 students at the school. To that end, they commissioned a study to look at what the structure could be. They determined that when the previous superintendent retired, they would hire an interim superintendent to help them look at those structures and to move forward. And of course, that brings me to the table. By October, November, it became very clear to them that the excellent work that we were doing in professional development and student programming was much better, WEMEP was much better suited in achieving the kinds of work in equity, integration, cultural competence, and closing the achievement gap than the schools would be. So in December, we began holding public meetings, parent, community, staff meetings. We had a student meeting with the high school students. We had three separate hearings. Two of them were called formally to hear testimony from stakeholders. Two separate work sessions were held between October and March, and WEMEP and member district leadership began seriously planning for the conveyance and how we would strengthen the work of the collaborative around the important task of the GAP. Over the course of many public meetings held, including several board meetings where the topic of WEMEP structure and conveyance was on the agenda, the numbers of attendees and speakers declined. We're hoping it's because we've conveyed good information. By the final vote, we had two parents speak on that evening, and their concerns were related to what Senator Rest alluded to in that, you know, what is going to be the allotment? What's going to be the arrangement? Are we going to take care of these schools? These are good schools. You know, excuse the expression, don't screw it up. And I can assure you that there is every intention of making the schools better, and that the allotments for the member districts will continue, has been agreed to, and I'm sure that the other two testifiers will reference that also. The WEMEP board voted unanimously in favor of this, as you heard, and all 11 member superintendents voiced support for it, as well as all member school boards voted to support it. So we had 100% support from the member school board, superintendents, and the Joint Powers Board. Last year, the legislature and governor approved a similar bill allowing EMID to convey their two schools for very similar reasons. The conveyance of Harambe Elementary to Roseville area schools is most similar to the conveyance that's in this legislation. I think you're probably, many of you are very familiar with that process. Got a little stickier with the other school because of the Perpich involvement, but ours is strictly going to two member regular school districts. And we are following the same laws and procedures that were followed in the last conveyance. We sought to work closely with Minneapolis and Robbinsdale in order to provide a soft landing, and you'll hear more about that, but it means that we are cognizant of serving the parents, the students, and the staff as we move forward as best we can. It means that we'll remain integration magnets and focus on the arts, all of the things that you've heard about and you have read about. I'm trying to shorten up a little bit here so that we can get to the questions. And it means that students will still be transported. So the allotment's still in place and there will be the transportation. WEMEP has a plan to convey the schools, confident in the potential for maintaining and enhancing what's good about the schools, and a plan to seek to build and strengthen the quality work begun in supporting all of the young people of all of the member districts through professional development and quality student program. All of this based on equity, integration, cultural competence, and student achievement. I urge you to support the bill so we can continue to move forward on behalf of the WEMEP member districts, their children, and their families. I thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent.
I'm Aldo Sicoli, Superintendent of Robbinsdale Area Schools. Chair Wieger, Senator Rest, and committee members, thank you for providing the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 1110. Robbinsdale Area Schools enthusiastically embraces the continuation of an integration arts magnet at the Fair Crystal School, which enrolls students from WEMEP member districts and other school districts. And that's done by reserving slots for the member district students, and the lottery's already been conducted for this next year, and the plans are to continue that into the future, the foreseeable future. We want to keep getting students from member districts as well as non-member districts to enroll in these schools. We're committed to working with Minneapolis Public Schools to create a sustainable kindergarten through grade 12 configuration. Our school district has a strategic plan focused on equity and student achievement and a proud tradition in the arts, so we are well suited to build upon the excellence at the Fair Crystal site. I might also add, Superintendent Lester talked about different ways that groups have supported this bill. The Association of Metropolitan School Districts also supports the bill. So we at Robbinsdale want to do whatever we can to provide a soft landing for current students and staff. Fair Crystal has students in grades 4 through 8. Students entering fourth grade will be able to continue through eighth grade as we work with Minneapolis Public Schools to ensure a K-12 integration magnet with an arts focus. We are encouraging Fair Crystal staff to stay in their current positions if they want to do so. We want to continue the many valuable partnerships that the school currently has. We also want to do what we can to strengthen this tremendous school. We're prepared to add two additional positions for the 2015-16 school year, an instructional coach and an equity specialist. This will enhance the school's efforts in equity and student achievement. We also have a talented teaching and learning department that will assist in developing, enriching, and aligning curriculum. Robbinsdale Area Schools values its partnership with WEMAP school districts and looks forward to expanding the exceptional professional development and student programs that WEMAP offers. We are confident that we will do well in educating fair students as WEMAP focuses on the other important areas of its mission. Please support this bill so we can move forward seamlessly in serving the families of the 11 WEMAP school districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Liss. I am General Counsel to Minneapolis Public Schools. I'll be brief, so we'll have opportunities for questions. I do want to emphasize that we're excited about the opportunity to build on the success of the Downtown Fair School. We've been working hard with the downtown staff and with families and with the Robbinsdale schools to make the transition as seamless and as smooth as possible. Our superintendent has met with the staff, with families. We've had individual meetings with our teachers, with other staff, because we want to encourage them to stay so that parents really will see the same school that they are working, that they're so pleased with, but also that we can build on the success, that we think we have opportunities that we can provide. And it's been a great opportunity to work with the Robbinsdale District as we work to assure that we have an integrated, seamless pre-K-12 program focused on inter-district integration and arts integration in the schools. Again, we are working, we're reserving the spots for our member districts. We want to encourage families to go and really enhance. We've seen some districts really have less of a commitment to the program than other districts, and we want to build on those that are very successful and encourage other districts to participate. So we look forward to the opportunity. We have strong relationships with Downtown Arts and with the cultural organizations. We feel like as a Minneapolis school, we can augment those relationships and build on the success and continue to give the students downtown a unique opportunity to have an integrated arts education. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bonnoff, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Thank you, Senator Rust, for bringing it forward. My kids have taken classes at the Fair School. I've been at the downtown school as well, and they really do provide a great, great venue for our kids, particularly in the arts. So thank you.
Some of the member questions have been thoroughly answered in testimony and in vetting prior to the hearing. Are there further questions or comments from members? Senator Ress, we'll entertain a motion. Senator Bonnoff.
My request is the motion to refer it to finance so it can be on its way to capital investment.
Senator Bonnoff so moves. Further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Ress, and the testifiers. Well done. Senator Johnson, Senate File 1245, and we ask her testifiers to please join her at the table. Welcome, everyone.
It's 1124.
1245.
This is a video resource grant program establishment and appropriation.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to bring forward this bill, Senate File 1245, which will create a professional development initiative to help teachers increase student achievement. Now, wouldn't we all want that? By advancing this advancing this proposal will allow Minnesota teachers to have access to a treasure of contemporary and historic video materials that will enrich the classroom experience for their students. The Minnesota Public Television Association will host a two-year series of teacher training institutes across the state to provide teachers with free resources and the techniques to integrate Minnesota legacy-funded videos about Minnesota arts, history, and culture into classrooms across the curriculum. The program will further create a network of certified Minnesota master teachers who can provide ongoing peer-to-peer hands-on training in new ways to integrate video and other interactive technologies in their classrooms and serve as mentors to their fellow teachers. I think all of us have known how important public television has been to our state, but this is really an example of something that can take it further, and it will become a resource that I think will be a great help to our schools and teachers.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, and we'll hear from your testifiers. Mr. Stuzinski.
Mr. Stuzinski.
Yes.
Yuck so much, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bill Stuzinski, and I represent the Friends of Minnesota Public Television, and I've talked to most of you over the years about public television and our enthusiasm. I want to thank the legislature for funding the legacy programs a number of years ago and the citizens of Minnesota for providing that constitutional amendment or passing that amendment. And I want to thank Senator Johnson for taking a significantly important interest in this legislation to take some of the things we've already done and put together and bring them forward. Public television is education. We've been education since the 50s when we started in Minnesota. There are six stations serving Minnesota. We reach everybody. We reach all school districts over the air, for example. You don't need a cable to do that. But, Mr. Chairman and members, we've created a lot of legacy content. And this is the report we submitted. This is the report we just submitted to the legislature about all the legacy programs we did in each of your districts throughout the state, each of the regions of the state with the six stations. And just let me give you a couple of highlights, because this content's already developed. In the past biennium, we worked with over 5,000 artists and historians. They've been featured on legacy programs we put together. We've developed more than 4,000 hours of broadcast on the air. Our programs have been seen by about 7 million people over the biennium, over the air, at home. And we've had 3.3 million web views and hits on our legacy programs throughout the six stations serving Minnesota. It's a very big thing. We have a lot of content, and I want to share with you also, we've developed with legacy funds and our programming over 700 education guides that are now available. So the idea here is to take all this wonderful content we've already developed, plus other content we have with PBS Kids and things like that, education, and bring it into the classroom to be used benefit. So the state doesn't have to pay for the public doesn't have to pay for the development of the content. We have it. We've got lots of wonderful materials. And that's what this program is all about. I wanted to share some overall statistics. And I want to turn it over to Kim, I think, to take you through what they're actually doing up in Prairie Public Television, northwestern Minnesota.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Chairman Wieger and members of the committee, my name is Kim Stangem. I'm executive producer at Prairie Public up in northwestern Minnesota, and I'm representing the six member stations of the Minnesota Public Television Association today. I come before you to encourage your support for Senate File 1245, which Senator Johnson we're very grateful to Senator Johnson for bringing that forward for consideration. We are proposing to implement a statewide teacher training institute program. This is, as Bill said, something that we've done in northwestern Minnesota that we are now ready to make available to teachers throughout the state. And I've brought a short video kind of demonstrating how this works in action. So with your permission, I'll turn my microphone over to the computer.
Okay.
Minnesota Public Television Association has brought more than 300 hours of Minnesota arts, culture, and history into living room, Minnesota. Now it's time to bring these resources into the classroom. The MPTA Teacher Training Institute project will bring teachers together for professional development to learn how to integrate Minnesota legacy content across the curriculum. Research from the George Lucas Educational Foundation shows an inspiring and informed teacher is the most important factor in boosting student achievement levels. To keep their classroom skills sharp and their teaching methods fresh, teachers want and need hands-on training in the latest proven techniques to engage and inspire their students. Public television has the resources to bridge the gap between traditional methods of teaching and the new technologies that engage a generation of digital native learners. Hosted each year by Minnesota Public Television Association member stations at locations across the state, Minnesota teachers will learn from their peers. Certified master teachers from Minnesota schools who have developed model lessons that demonstrate how to use technologies in the classroom.
People would be surprised how little time we actually have available as teachers with other educators. It's really nice to have that and then to bring back into my own teaching.
The Teacher Training Institute is a hands-on opportunity for teachers to put these new ideas into practice and refine their skills in new project-based approaches to learning. Teachers will also receive a toolkit of free turnkey lessons they can put to immediate use in their classrooms. Piloted by Prairie Public in northwestern Minnesota, teacher training institutes have proven to be a benefit to teachers, no matter their grade level, no matter the size of their school, no matter their subject. For example, a science teacher used a history documentary in a lesson on calculating mass and weight. An art teacher used a science program to illustrate an art history lesson on World War I propaganda. An English teacher used an arts program to inspire students' essays on Native American history. In this two-year program, the Minnesota Public Television Association will build a proven professional development initiative that can benefit all Minnesota teachers and their students.
This is my second time in this institute, and I loved it. I loved the feedback, the time that was taken to critique, and I think it comes down to relationships, being able to develop the relationships with other professionals and have that time to really fine-tune a lesson or your teaching. It's just really a valuable program.
Today's students have grown up surrounded by television and technology, and teachers realize this. Research from the Center for Children and Technology has shown that almost all teachers are currently using video in their classroom in some form. And what the Teacher Training Institute is intended to do is to provide teachers with up-to-date research-based techniques that will increase the effectiveness of the use of the video in their classroom and thereby increase student achievement levels also. The project is based on the real basic educational principle of acquiring a new skill. First you hear about it, then you see it, then you do it, and then you've got it. In this instance, the students are our teachers. They first attend a series of seminars to lead them to certification as a master teacher. During these seminars, they learn techniques, as I said, that are research-based, that are proven to increase effectiveness, excuse me, to help them design, plan, and deliver video-based lessons. As part of the certification program, teachers are required to develop a model lesson that incorporates these techniques. So they include a video in there. They include a reading assignment. They include a project-based activity that will really drive home a concept. These master teachers, at the end of their certification process, then become teachers to other teachers. At the Teachers Training Institute program, which will take place once a year, in each of the MPTA regions, all classroom teachers are invited to come in, and they take the place of students during these model lessons. Our master teachers present a lesson, and those of us who are attending, we might be fourth grade science teachers, or we might be high school social science teachers, or we might be kindergarten students. But we sit through a model lesson that allows us to see how a teacher can use video in a way that truly is effective with their students. Everyone attending the Institute, besides having these wonderful learning opportunities, will also be able to take away a toolkit that has the model lessons, all the accompanying resources, as well as additional resources that they can use in their classroom. In the second year, then, those master teachers recruit and train other teachers in the master's certification program who will then repeat the result by teaching at the second year's Teacher Training Institute. As part of this partnership, teachers also teach us, the MPTA producers, in ways that will help us make our programs more classroom friendly. When I was first teaching, it was pretty common. You'd drop in an hour-long film strip or a movie, and then students went on from that into the next classroom. These days, classroom teachers are looking for short clips, and as producers, we need to consider how to make our projects more classroom friendly so that it's a little easier to incorporate. These free video resources that we will then create a strong database from our Minnesota Legacy content that will help teachers find ways to incorporate Minnesota arts, culture, and legacy videos into their classrooms, whatever their subject. One of the examples in the video I just showed you was I produced a documentary on Steamboats on the Red, and a teacher took that video clip and helped students. Their task was to design out of aluminum foil a steamboat that would sit on water. They put different weights in it to see how much weight that their particular design would hold, and then they had a competition about who could move the most weight down the end of their water trough that they had in their classroom. That was not something I had ever considered. I would have seen it in a history class, but not in a science class. That was really encouraging. And the master teachers can help us learn what it is we need to look for to help them do their job. The Minnesota Public Television Association is requesting $500,000 for each of the next 2 years to establish this program, to create a base of Minnesota classroom videos and model lessons, and make partnerships in the education community who will serve as leaders to their schools and to their districts. This approach builds a strong group of committed master teachers throughout the state who can serve as mentors in their area and support their colleagues with new techniques, and will build a sustainable program throughout the state. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'd like to turn the microphone over now to two of our enthusiastic classroom teachers. And,
please, if you would.
Yes, we could move over just a little bit so we can see you.
Move over.
Welcome to the committee.
Chairman Wieger and members of the committee, we are so honored to be here today. I'm Sue Helberg, and this is my co-worker, Peggy Greenwalt. And when we were asked by Prairie Public to come today, it didn't take us long to decide, just because, number one, to see this process.
Could the projector be turned off?
Yes.
Okay.
When they asked us to come, it didn't take us long because, number one, just to see this process is amazing, and a trip to the state capitol. You can't pass that up. And two, when we found out the ultimate goal was to bring the training that we've been attending to our local rural area, that would be amazing. The videos she was talking about, I can say I honestly use videos, the short clips, daily in my kindergarten classroom, probably 3 to 5 a day. I use those videos to bring those lessons to life, further explain a concept, or maybe to, in a vocabulary lesson, actually show a rushing river for the word rushing. That's so powerful to all my learners, especially our English language learners. And what a better way for them to truly understand that experience.
When Sue and I first started attending the Public Prairie trainings in Concordia and Fargo, we often asked the organizers why classes like these weren't offered more in our area, because the trainings in our area like this aren't available, and we know that there's a need. Teachers are always looking for new ways and different ways to enhance their teaching, and workshops through Prairie Public have given Sue and I many opportunities to learn about their valuable resources and what we can easily use in our classrooms. Trainings we have attended have given us many resources, connections with other teachers, and practical and appropriate websites and apps that we can use with our students. By integrating these short video clips, the students really increase their understanding of topics.
I thought it was interesting. We asked other staff members from our district if they could give us some input before we came today, you know, not wanting to say exactly the right thing. And one of the teachers said, honestly, kids are drawn to the screen. If I can use that to my advantage, to draw them into my lesson, it's more likely that they're going to retain that information. Prairie Public has shown us that they can give the training. They've done a good job. And it's our goal with the passage of this bill that we can get that done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think that basically concludes our presentation. We thank you for this opportunity and this experience. Again, we'd just like to take this program statewide. We think it has some real benefit. We've even looked at has specific application of schools that may have an achievement gap issue or whatever. Had some conversations about all of those kinds of things, so it's easily transportable. Again, we've got the content. We know a lot about education. In fact, your fiscal staff probably learned how to count because of public television years ago. But in any event, Mr. Chairman, thank you for this opportunity, and we're excited to share a little bit of what's going on. Perhaps others can use it as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Testifiers.
I would like to just mention that Senator Wicklund, Stump, Daines, and Weber are the co-authors on this bill. So thank you to everyone. And with that, I would...
Thank you. And Sergeant Johnson, I will ask, is there anyone in the audience that would like to express testimony on Senate File 1245? If not, Senator Johnson, a motion?
Motion to lay on the table.
Possible inclusion?
For possible inclusion, whatever you say.
In the E-12 omnibus bill. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Thank you very much.
Next,
Senate File 1124, Senator Stump. And we ask that the three testifiers listed please join him. That'll be followed by Senate File 961, Senator Jensen. And we know we have testifiers from Greater Minnesota on other bills, and we will get to you. Thank you for your patience. Senator Stump, Senate File 1124.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I want to take a few minutes to kind of set the stage, and I almost feel like a pastor in a church preaching. You know, the front pews are empty, but
some of the congregation is just arriving. So.
Wonderful, welcome.
Okay, yes, we welcome you.
Okay. About 2 or 3 years ago, we had legislation that asked that we would study the teacher evaluation and development program that we put in place, and also the alternative teacher professional pay system. And the two of them have a lot of similarities and similar goals. And if I could just, you know, read here, it says the work of that group was charged with the task of seeking alignment between the alternative teacher performance pay system, which is known as QCOMP, and the teacher development and evaluation statute. So they did that, and of course one of the recommendations, they had several recommendations, which we heard, I believe it was back in February, I think Ms. Hermanson from the department gave a presentation. One of the recommendations was, and this is probably one of the most important things that school districts and the legislature can do. The key to really making education work is to have a really well-trained teacher in that classroom. And if that teacher can inspire, just as that video we saw just a few minutes ago, if that teacher can inspire the children to learn, that is really what turns the education process on, and that child will probably continue to learn all through their life. But there's a little bit of a catch, and the catch is that one of the recommendations said that the legislature should combine these programs into one program implemented under the provisions of this statute. And then there should be equal funding should be provided for all districts. And the reason for that is that to have an effective program, you have to have some resources. And if you don't, you're just not going to have an effective program. So that was the recommendations, and I want to show you, I want to thank our staff. These are all versions of rewrites, and I want to thank our Senate staff for being so patient with me. And every time I'd meet with a group, I'd have changes, and I'd rewrite it. And finally, I came to the conclusion of what we have before you, which is and I believe that we need to do what that work group recommends at some point. And I think the point, it seems to me, the point isn't this year. I think we need to do that. It's almost like doing a recodification, because you have a whole chapter dealing with two chapters dealing with two different things, but very similar. So I think what I'm hoping can come out of this session is a couple of things. One is that when you look at districts, and all districts are charged with this development and evaluation process. If you look at, let's say, Centennial, which has approximately roughly around 6,000 students, they're receiving over $1.7 million for this process, for what they're in. They're in the QCOM. If you look at Bemidji, which has close to the same number of students, they're getting $0. And the same way with Moorhead, which has about the same number of students. So there isn't an equity there, and I think all of us agree that you can't hire substitute teachers, or you can't, if you're going to do a good job when mentoring or programming, you just can't do that without resources. If you look at Lakeville, Lakeville has about 10,000 students, and they receive $0 for this program. If you look at Bloomington, they have roughly around 10,000 students. They receive $2.6 million. So it's a program that is so important and so essential that I think we need to make the jump this year to try to start the process of leveling that out, providing resources and guidance to all of the districts. So I want to just mention that, I do have an amendment besides, maybe I should get that before us right now, and then I can talk about it a little bit, and then we'll hear from our testifiers. The amendment is the A4 amendment.
And that's being distributed. And Senator Stump moves the author's amendment. We'll vote on it after each person has it, but we'll take some testimony as it's being distributed.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just touch on the couple points in the amendment. What I think we need to do this year is to try to get some resources out there to the school districts. And the approach I am suggesting is that we do that through a process of raising the cap. Currently, there is a cap on the amount of dollars that are available for this program. And what I would like to see us do is to raise that cap and gradually start working our way toward an equitable distribution. It's going to take several years, the way it's set up. To give you an example, if we do what we're talking about, Dr. Melcher over at the department, currently there's about little over 50% of the districts are covered. If we raise the cap, the assumptions in the fiscal note say that in 2017 we would get up to about 64% of the districts that would be covered.
Senator Stump moves the author's A4 amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Adopted. 1124 as amended.
Okay. And then 2018, we'd get up to about 68%. And 2019, up to about 73%. So it's a gradual process of bringing in the districts. Wait and go through the fiscal note after. But the amendment that we adopted basically does that. It raises the cap, and then the other piece of that amendment is basically asking for a report from the department on some of the expenditures and how the districts are using that money for their programs. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I ask our testifiers to testify, and then I'd like to come back and go through the fiscal note.
Okay. Welcome to each of the testifiers, and for the record, please state your name, who you're representing.
Chair Wieger, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Don Sinner. I'm the president of Education Minnesota Lakeville and the co-chair of our district's TDE and ATPPS committees, both. I'm here today to support the proposal in 1124, specifically raising the cap on funding. Like he said, we have $0 in Lakeville to address this. We've spent the past 27 months in collaborative district union efforts to design a system that meets the statutory requirements of both TDE and the ATPPS laws. And we are laser focused on student achievement and success of our 11,000 students served by 676 educators. From early childhood school readiness to college and career readiness in world's best workforce. The plan we have developed has the approval of the MDE already. Our only obstacle is the lack of resources to fully implement our vision for success. This is due to the cap on the ATPPS funding, which we ran into last summer. And there are very little funds passed this year except for the ATEP funds that we received last year from the bill out of this body. What would this funding support? Additional time. We have already flexed 2 days in our calendar to support student assessment at the beginning of each year to identify student needs and added a day to our calendar to dedicate to professional development to meet those needs. We would like to be able to add 2 more days to our calendar, extend our year, for staff to dedicate to the analysis of this data, plan intervention strategies, and reflect on the results. This would help additional educator support through the addition of 9 full-time peer coaches to train members on data analysis that assists in the formulation of specific classroom learning goals, targeted achievement gap goals, and site-shared math and literacy goals in our system. These coaches would also be responsible for mentoring probationary educators as well as those who are assigned to new positions. Support for professional collaboration are professional learning communities focused on student data, identifying needs, and planning interventions. And cognitive coaching used by our peer partners, and that's every single educator in our system, in our peer observation system, and increasing the effectiveness of our PLCs, which meet every Wednesday, in order to improve our professional practice. We would support educator leadership positions for those who accept increased responsibility on our site and district shared leadership committees, our peer review teams, and our joint TDE oversight committee. A total of 131 stipend positions outside of the student day, which has no funding source beyond this year. We would support additional professional development identified by our site and district shared leadership teams as they align our continuous improvement plans at both the site and district level. Lakeville School Board and EM Lakeville are both committed to teacher development, accountability, and a focus on student learning. Our only obstacle is finding the necessary resources in our current district budget to support this vision of success. The dollars simply aren't there. We have been able to begin this process this year through the goodwill of educators and the limited resources provided by the ATEP funding last year. You can help us realize this vision and support student learning by supporting this proposal. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Wieger and committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. My name is Katie Perry, and I work for Education Minnesota as an education issues assistant. I promise to be very brief, but before I give my brief testimony, I just want to take a moment and let you know that before joining the Education Minnesota staff, I taught high school English and Spanish for 22 years at Tartan High School in Chair Wieger's district. And I want to take a second to thank the Senator, Senator Wieger, to thank you for your many, many years of work on behalf of all the teachers, students, and families in District 622 here at the Capitol. We really appreciate all you've done.
Well, thank you. That was unsolicited, folks.
I just want to say I think Senator Stump has set the scene very well, and Mr. Sinner has given you a really good sense of the practicalities in the district. So I just want to add from the Education Minnesota perspective that we're here to support any and all efforts to fund teacher development and evaluation. We see this as a small step, as Senator Stump described it, in the process of achieving equitable funding for teacher development and evaluation, which is what we're here to support. Another aspect that Mr. Sinner's district describes so well is the districts that have put in all the time and effort to meet all the requirements of the QCOMP or ATPPS program but are still waiting for funding. And so there are several other districts that are in that position, and so it's only fair that those folks get the funding that they've worked so hard for. And also it will give the opportunity, as Senator Stump described, for districts outstate as well to have the opportunity to apply for funds as they're trying to incorporate the new teacher development evaluation into the good work they're already doing. Thanks. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Thank you.
Muy bien. Okay. She's a Spanish teacher. Okay.
Spanish.
Okay. Next, I believe Denise Dietrich. We do have a letter, I believe, from Brad Lindell from C as well. We would invite additional testifiers to join. Senator Stump had mentioned Rose Hermanson is here. We did have background on the report earlier, as acknowledged. So welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I came in a little late, but I did hear initially Senator Stump's comments about the evolution of his bills. And if you need any other support in that, this is the evolution of my testimony. So, quite well taken. So anyhow, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here on the behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I would like to provide a little bit of support for all of the versions of any of the bills. No, I'm just kidding. For this bill, from three different perspectives. And the first is my past life as a state representative. And the second is from the perspective of the work group that was convened over the interim. And then the third is from a resolution that was passed at our 2014 Delegate Assembly. And so I'm going to go back to 2005 when QCOMP was initially passed. I was actually in the State House at the time and on the conference committee and part of the negotiations. And what I can say about that process is that we never believed or intended that this would only be a partial rollout of the QCOMP program. We really intended that this would be a statewide strong message of support to teachers and students in the state of Minnesota. And then second of all, a statewide teacher evaluation was not in sight at that point. For those of you who are new here, that might be hard for you to believe, but true. So here we find ourselves almost 10 years later with a dual system, which have some actual very similar goals, but one is funded and one is not. The statewide teacher evaluation system is now in place, but there is no systemic funding that would support and institutionalize its success, quality, or longevity for the future students and the future teachers of this state. The innovative teacher pay for performance program that we implemented in 2005, it only supports currently, right now, 20% of the school districts in the state and 44% of the charter schools. Why does this matter? Well, funding. QCOMP school districts get up to $260 per student more than non-QCOMP students. And why does that matter to you? Some of you might say, well, part of that's a levy. It is. But let's not forget, $169 per student is state aid. And then there is the equalization component, and that is state aid as well. So that, and then, but let me just take that one step further. It isn't, we always talk about money here, and I'm sure nobody would be surprised, a member of the School Board Association coming up and talking about money. But more importantly, there is always another layer of depth, and that is, let's just take a look at what that money has bought over the 10 years. And this comes from the Minnesota Department of Education website, and it's titled QCOMP Activity Funds. QCOMP funds may be used for a variety of things: administration, supervision, licensed classroom teachers, non-licensed classroom personnel, substitute teacher salaries, substitute non-licensed classroom instructional salaries, other salary payments, fringe benefits, consulting fees, data processing fees, travel expenses, instructional materials, individualized instructional supplies, textbooks, workbooks, standardized tests, technology and equipment, and there are a few others. So what I want to, the point here is that some school districts having access to that level of funding that I've already described to purchase these things creates a big inequity in our state, and it's one that needs to be closed. So I would even go so far as to say that this inequity is unconstitutional. I don't believe that this is a uniform system in our state. So I think that you have two options. You either fund TDE, or you lift the cap on QCOMP. Still in 2005. That concludes my personal perspective. Another perspective is from our MSBA staff in St. Peter. They did participate in the work group over the interim, and they came out with many recommendations, and all very fair. But what I would just like to emphasize is two of the and if you would like a full list of them, we can get them to you. But partially, what they part of the recommendation said that these two programs should be combined into one. This bill does not do that, but I would venture to guess that might be something that needs to evolve versus happen all in one big jump. And but very clear, equal funding should be provided to all districts. And then the access to the local levy authority should be accessible to all districts. And the current amendment does do that. And then last, another perspective. In 2014, we passed a resolution at the Minnesota School Boards Association Delegate Assembly, and that in the end said that we should lift the cap for all districts to have access to QCOMP money. And that passed 93-10. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to conclude my comments. I think that this bill is a step in the right direction. And the one thing that I think that hasn't been made very clear here, though, is that I think it makes takes a large leap into attracting and retaining high-quality teachers in the state of Minnesota. And if you look at all the bills that have been introduced this past legislative session that deal with attracting teachers, retaining teachers, mentoring teachers, more training for teachers, this bill can actually be seen as encompassing a lot of those provisions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Before we go to the fiscal note, Senator Stump, there's at least two questions or comments. Senator Kent, followed by Senator Bonhoeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, and without taking anything away from Ms. Perry's recognition of Senator Wieger's leadership, just as a proud senator, I want to point out that Tartan High School is across the street from his district and actually in mine, so I just wanted to get that.
Noted.
I also want to thank...
For the record, I was on the school board for 18
absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely. I'm not taking anything away, but I like to claim Tartan, so there you go.
And we are both sharing that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to thank Ms. Dietrich for, I think, a really effective description of what this means. I happen to have in my Senate district three school districts, two of which are QComp and one of which is not, one of which is on the waiting list, and that's going to have to do with my question. So, Ms. Hermanson, I might need you to answer a very, very quick question. I want to thank you, Senator Stump, for what I think is a really appropriate approach. As you know, I have a bill, Senate File 1719, that's not been heard yet, but that would have lifted the cap just for the waitlisted districts. I think, you know, as we've all acknowledged, the teacher evaluation and development process that we have embarked on as a state is so important for teacher quality. I fully support it, and like I said, I recognize within my own district the challenges of having it partially funded and how we're going to get to having it fully funded. So I really appreciate this approach. And so my question would be for Ms. Hermanson, just to clarify that within this delete all approach, we will maintain the existing process for applications and the current waiting list as we move forward. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, sure. Senator Kent, it's my understanding that that's not been changed. Yesterday I met with Senator Stump and gave him the list of districts we have four that have already approved applications that we haven't been able to fund. We have two pending, which I think is one of your districts. We also have had some letters of intent from other school districts and charters. And so I don't think his bill makes any change in the process.
Great. Thank you both. And like I said, I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Senator Bonoff's going to hold on her question, but Ms. Craigthorpe, did you have a testimony?
Senator, Chairman, and Committee, thank you so much. I'm Holly Craigthorpe. I'm a Minneapolis teacher on leave of absence representing our 1,000 members at Education for Excellence today, and just want to take a moment to thank you, thank the committee for hearing this, thank you, Senator Stump, for authoring this bill. Our members definitely would support raising the cap on QComp. In addition, we're hoping that this committee will be willing to hear Senate File 1497 so that we can introduce options for districts with hard-to-staff schools to use bonuses and in a flexible way, and we definitely agree with the testimony that we need to increase the equity with these funds. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kronquist.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, and Senator Stump, Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and we just want to add our voice of support to Senator Stump's bill. Appreciate him bringing it forward. As Senator Kent mentioned, she has a similar bill that we had worked with her on to fund the waiting list districts, but I think as you heard from Ms. Hermanson, there's going to be more coming, so we want to make sure there are funds available for all districts that are ready to come online. Most of our members are in the QComp program, but we do have several that are not. Those that are in, I think, will tell you, and I think this comes from both the administration and the teacher side, that highly support the program. They think it's been one of the most transformative things that's happened in recent years that has really improved instruction, improved professional development, improved practice, and so they really want to see it continue. And so our platform called for continuing the program but expanding it to let everyone in, and then if we can, to try to find maybe an interim means to provide some funding for just the TDE component until the other districts are able to enter the QComp program. So again, thank you, Senator Stump. We support this bill.
Thank you. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be brief, but I just want to also thank Senator Stump. Senator Stump has been talking about, since I've come here, how unfair it is that some districts have this opportunity and some don't. I wholeheartedly agree. My districts do have this opportunity, but I think this might be perhaps the most important finance bill we're hearing this session. So I just want to say on the record that this inequity should be fixed because it is one inequity that has such direct links to teacher quality and thus student performance. So thank you.
You've got momentum. You're going. Okay, who'd like to join in the chorus of support?
Mr. Chairman and members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. There's a handout going around. We believe that a picture is worth a thousand words. And to highlight that, the inequity in the current situation. Now, this map is a couple of years old, but with the cap that's in place, not much has changed. And you can see that big swath of yellow across rural Minnesota. I think only about 13% of greater Minnesota districts currently participate in QComp. And so we do appreciate Senator Stump's hard work and diligence to this issue over many years. And the testimony we've heard today about being able to advance this and create a new revenue source for our districts and teachers and students to be able to participate. So just want to be on record today, Mr. Chairman, supporting the good work before you. Thank you.
Good. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Ann Hobby, and I'm with Parents United for Public Schools. And we just want to throw our endorsement behind Senator Stump's bill. I sat on the teacher evaluation working group as a parent representative for the state default model. And I just can't tell you, we parents want TDE implemented with fidelity. We see it as a... supporting our teachers and their development is the greatest thing we can do for the quality of our classrooms. So we are supportive. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Senator Stumpf, I'd like to highlight the fiscal note, and then we'll entertain a motion to lay over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chairman, there's one other amendment, the A5 amendment.
Okay.
And and then I'll explain that. It's quite simple. It has to do with the intermediate. There are three intermediate schools, and because of the way they were set up, they just need to be included. And the language on page 2 basically says that they'll be treated. I believe it's $3,000 per teacher. is the number that I have. And we heard testimony before. There's a little bit of a variation between what the program costs per teacher. And I think the swing is like right around $2,600 to $3,000, something like that.
We'll take testimony shortly. This is still the first stop, so it's an author's amendment on the A5 as described. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Carried. Ms. Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Connie Hayes, Superintendent of Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate District, and I'm here on behalf of all three of the intermediate districts in the metropolitan area. I want to speak specifically to Senator Stump's amendment and the logic behind that. As the Senator mentioned, the way we are set up, it's a little bit different than a K-12. Almost all of the students the intermediate districts serve are actually counted, the ADMs, in their member districts as opposed to our district. And so if you try to calculate using the by-student formula for the number of students that actually show up as ADMs in our district, the number is very, very small. So our rationale behind applying the calculation to teachers is that dollars are actually used to improve teacher performance, and so applying the dollars directly to the number of staff seems to make sense to us. So we urge your support of the amendment. Thank you.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the concerns I have is something that we've been talking about a good amount this session, and that is co-ops and educational districts. One of the co-ops in my area was told that they didn't qualify for any of the teacher evaluation. And my concern is by listing intermediate schools specifically without those others would then, again, hamper their ability to have these funds available for their staff that are held at the same standard. And so I guess what I'm wondering, either from Mr. Arnson or the testifier, do we believe that this is all-encompassing for co-ops and education districts?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Valerie Dozen. I represent the intermediate school districts. And when I worked with Mr. Arneson on this amendment, that topic came up. And our intention was to include it, to include the service co-ops in the intermediate districts. And Mr. Arneson can certainly chime in. But my understanding was for the time that we had available, it would require a change of all of the QCOM statutes, and we needed a little more time to be able to do that. And so I spoke with Senator Stumpf, and I spoke with the service co-ops, and I will continue to work on trying to change that. I wanted to just get this amendment out here today for the intermediates, but I will. You have my commitment to work on trying to add those two as well.
It's noted on the record. Okay. Let's go to the fiscal note, and we'll lay it over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chairman and members, the fiscal note, I believe you have it in your packet.
Yes.
Currently, believe Mr. Wilms maybe can correct me if I'm not correct, but I think the current cap is it 70 or 75?
75.
$75 million. And what this would do when you raise or take the cap off, the if you go to the page 3, kind of has the layout, and you'll see that the cap at $75 million, which is the under the current, that's the top line. And as you go down, the you'll notice that the current cost for 2017 would be $17 million. And the reason for the $17 million is that we'd only pay 90% of the aid in 1 year and pick up the 10% in the next year. And then if you go all the way down on that second column, you'll notice that the total levy cost would be $8.4 million. So that's assuming that everyone that goes into the program would levy. And then you can look across as you see 2018, the cost would be $23 million. 2019, that would be an aid. 2019, $29 million. And so the same way on the bottom line there, you'll see the levy increase as well. And I don't know exact date or year when we'd actually pick them all up, but the assumption is that the first year would be a larger number, primarily because of the there's a waiting list right now. So you have school districts, and some of them are fairly good-sized districts. So that's why it would jump a little higher in that first year, going from 50% up to about 64%. And then it kind of levels off and goes a little bit slower. So, Mr. Chairman, that's kind of the information that I have, and would ask for your support, and I think a lot of the districts across the state would appreciate it.
I see you couldn't get any co-authors, though.
It doesn't take long.
On your bill.
Oh, is that right?
Maybe you've got some momentum there. Okay. Further discussion? Not Senator Stump moves that.
Senator Chair?
Senator Pratt.
Thank you. I don't want to bring up the whole QComp issue, but and I certainly appreciate Mr. Sinner's description of the plan they have in Lakeville. I think that's very well thought out. But we also have 2% set-asides, and we also should, I think, at some point in time be looking at teacher evaluation as kind of a business-as-usual process. My fear, Senator Stumpf, is that if we continue down this path of a separate appropriation, we've already shown that we have a hard time keeping up with the basic needs formula. I fear that we're going to have a hard time keeping up with the required expenditure to make this appropriate, and wondering and allowing our local districts and our bargaining units to effectively make the innovations and the changes that they need to it. I support the bill as it is. It's just I'm thinking long term that at some point in time we have to bring this back to an expectation rather than a special program.
Mr. Chairman, back in 2005, I didn't bring that version, but I had Senator, some of you may remember Senator Steve Kelly. Senator Steve Kelly and I rewrote tried to combine the 2% staff development money and the QComp and tried to, you know, streamline it. Because there's so many similarities.
Right.
I mean, the goals were very similar. As far, we didn't get very far. Really. I mean, we got the thing wrote, but we didn't have the horsepower basically then to you know get the change implemented. But that's the reason why in here in that we put that report. We want to find out where's that money going, what's it going for, and then try to get the recommendations from that work group. Somebody, I don't know, maybe it'll be you that can tackle that and see if you can bring a kind of a synergism to all of these programs.
Great. Senator Stump moves that Senate File 1124 as amended be recommended for possible inclusion in the E-12 omnibus bill. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And as noted, the suggestion that co-ops be included, and we just need to get the language. Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Next is Senator Jensen, Senate File 961, and within 10 minutes we'll be on Senate File 741, and at about 10:40 we'll conclude with Senate File 995.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 961 establishes a grant program to support school districts in paying agricultural education teachers for work over the summer with high school students in extended programs. And I would like at this point, Mr. Chair, to make an oral amendment to the current bill on line 1.8. It says extended projects. It's supposed to say extended programs. So I want to replace the word projects with programs.
Okay. That oral amendment at line 1.8, the word projects is programs. Author's amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Carried. As amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Extended contracts are a key component of a complete agriculture, food, and natural resource science program. The extra days are utilized for leadership development activities through FFA, experiential learning activities through supervised agricultural experience, farm and school garden programs, and community outreach. And the teacher is the essential element to successful experiential learning. Agriculture educators must assume new roles in the classroom and encourage student interaction with their environment and improve learning and comprehension. The application of classroom knowledge in the context of real-world situations should be the focus of all learning, really. 30% of the programs in Minnesota have no days that extend beyond the regular 9 months of the school year. The 70% that do, the days that they are allowed range from 5 days to a full 12-month contract. And with that variability in days available for them to work, means that nearly one half of the students are not receiving the services that they should for the 3 months of the year, especially in Minnesota, where the work that they can do and actually experience happens during the summer months. With FFA, a lot of what they do is with fairs, and that happens over the summer. The career development and exploration that they can do should be happening at times that it's actually being productively done in the state, which also occurs during the summer months. So what we're asking is that we can provide some grant money so that school districts can offer that longer extended contract so that they can do the work that they need to for the students to get that experiential learning that they need. I do have someone with me, but he would be here to answer questions if members would have any.
Your testifier would like to introduce himself, who you're representing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andrew Dewar, and I'm representing the Minnesota Association of Agriculture Educators. Senator Jensen did a great job explaining the bill, so I'll just stand for some questions.
One question, it's in blank on the grant amount. Is there a suggested
number? We ran the numbers, and we figured it'll be about $1 million a year, but I'm sure the department, when they do their fiscal note, could do a more accurate job. But when we ran the numbers ourselves, we figured about $1 million a year.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to thank Senator Jensen for bringing this bill forward. We look at the agricultural instructions and a lot of the stuff that goes on during the year, then the actual experience plays out in the summertime in the field. And we have a lot of ag instructors that are doing a lot of this on their own time. Some of the ag instructors aren't able to do it. And so this would really help get those instructors out there to work with the students to help implement some of the things that they learned in the classroom. I can remember years ago when I was in FFA in agriculture, our teacher was a 12-12 contract. And then pretty soon they were down to 11, and now they're down to a very, very minor amount. And I think it's very imperative that we put some money into this so that we can get our ag teachers back out there with the students to help them apply what they learned in the field approach. So thank you for bringing the bill forward, Senator Jensen. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll entertain a motion with that support. And it will keep the appropriation blank as we await targets and other information.
So. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, Senator Jensen, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I recommend that Senate File 961 be considered for
possible inclusion.
On
that motion, further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have Senate File 741, Senator Saxhaug, and we invite your testifiers to join you. Transportation sparsity revenue allowance. We have some additional handouts. Senator Saxhaug.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I'm presenting Senate File 741. Many rural school districts across the state operate their transportation budgets in the red due to sparsity. This bill helps the largest districts by square mileage in the state, which run deficits with regard to their transportation costs. These districts include Bemidji, Red Lake, St. Louis County, Park Rapids, Bagley, and Roseau. This legislation would cost approximately $1.6 million per year. I would note that St. Louis County, because it's not as self-explanatory, is basically the Highway 53 corridor between Duluth and International Falls, excluding the range. So it's a huge school district also. So with me today is James Hess, Superintendent of Bemidji Schools, Chris Leonin, Director of Business Services at Bemidji, and Ann Lundquist, Superintendent, Red Lake School. And they've got some brief presentations, and then they'll answer any questions.
Well, thank you, and we appreciate you coming down here and your patience. Please continue.
Thank you very much, Chair Wigger and committee members, for allowing us to visit with you today about a long-term problem that we face in rural Minnesota, and that's the problem of balancing the checkbook after we look at all the expenditures and all the revenues. Large rural and remote districts like Bemidji, like Red Lake, like St. Louis County certainly are at a distinct disadvantage when we total the balances. This is entirely due to the geography of our district. It isn't bad management. It isn't that we're not efficient as we possibly can. We just have a great distance to travel in order to pick up our kids. We'd like to refer you to the map that has been distributed. If you look at that map, you'll see a little bit about what we're up against. And the map kind of overlays the Bemidji School District on top of the metropolitan area. And you'll see the size of the Richfield School District, for instance. That just about covers Lake Bemidji. And then if you look at the upper ends, it goes all the way basically from Albertville to Stillwater, Shakopee to Rosemont. That's the kind of distance that we're talking about in Bemidji area schools and in several of these other school districts. The current transportation formula leaves us with a huge deficit that we must correct somehow, and the way that we have done that is by taking away resources from our general fund that we would have used to support teaching and learning. This is the equivalent in the 2013 budget of about 14 plus teachers. We have no choice since transportation is a mandated service. We've been articulating this problem in rural Minnesota schools for about the last 10 years, so you're probably tired of seeing me come down and talk to you about this. I know we got that comment from some of the House members when we visited with them recently. The problem of transportation sparsity is not getting better. In fact, it's getting worse. And if you look at some of the information that I provided, our cross-subsidy for transportation in the last few years has been growing, and it's not getting any better. In fact, over the last six-year period of time, we took $3,762,000 away from classrooms, away from teaching, textbooks, and instruction, and use that to provide for transportation. So it's a huge problem for us. It's getting bigger. Perhaps now would be a good time to implement a solution or address the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good visual to show the the difference in the sizes. Okay. Who'd like to go next?
Thank you very much for having us today, Senator Wieger, chair members, or committee members. My name is Chris Linen. I'm the business manager from the Bemidji School District. And in the end, it's really my job to make sure that we find the money to pay for the services that the kids need. What we're looking for here is a safety net like the one that the vast majority of school districts in the state have. Most are funded at or above their costs of transportation. Some have their costs of transportation provided for them by other school districts. Then there are those that the formulas are disconnected with. And we're one of those school districts. The disconnect occurs in two fashions. The main funding source for transportation, which is a mandated service, comes through the roll-in that occurred in the per-pupil payment amount. It pays school districts based on the number of students who attend their schools without regard of how many students actually ride the bus. And so if you have very high ridership percentages, you can end up with higher costs. If you have very low ridership percentages, you can end up with money left over. We fall in the high ridership category. The second disconnect is in the sparsity formula, which funds schools based on an assumed number of miles driven because of the size of your school district. Well, if you don't drive those miles, you can have money left over. But if you actually do have to drive those additional miles because of your geography, you incur the expenses. In Bemidji, we have both of those factors weighing against us. The high ridership and the actual miles that we have to drive lead us into a deficit situation. Now, we can talk about the idea of becoming more efficient, and we try to do that. But oftentimes, efficiency has a price. You weigh it against things like student safety. Where are your walk zones? How far should a student have to walk? How many students should you have at a group pickup? Additionally, functionality is a little bit at odds with efficiency because while we could fill a bus completely, it would take that one-hour bus ride up to a two-hour bus ride. That's really not fair to that student to be on the bus for a total of 4 hours a day. And so we're looking for a safety net here, a hold harmless. We'd like to be brought up to zero like the vast majority of schools. Thank you very much.
Up to 4 hours?
Well, if yes. You have a two-hour bus ride in the morning and a two-hour bus ride in the afternoon, you could be more efficient with the number of students in your bus, but you certainly wouldn't be doing them any favors. We try to keep our rides down to around an hour. Some are a little more, but by and large, if we keep them at an hour, sometimes we have to run a bus with 30 students in it instead of 40. And so that leads to a little bit of an inefficiency that's at odds with the practicality of getting kids to and from school.
Thanks for
especially
sharing.
When it's 40 below, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Chair Wieger, may I add?
Yes.
Our district, just in our route miles each year, travels over a million miles. Okay, over a million miles. That's how many miles we put on our school buses. OK, Okay, it's a phenomenal distance that we travel.
Yes. Thanks for sharing. Superintendent Lundquist, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators, Committee Members, and also thank you, also Senator Sacktog, for inviting us here today. I'd like to illustrate with just a few examples of how a district, a neighboring district to Bemidji, ours at Red Lake number 38, has some similar issues, but then again also some differences in the challenges for the current transportation sparsity funding. So it's important to us for a number of reasons, beginning with the fact we have over 1,000 square miles on Red Lake Nation. We have a number of regular bus routes on a daily basis, believe it or not, 19. And actually, four of those 19 exceed an hour and 30 minutes, the largest of which is an hour and 55 minutes. And interestingly enough, different than perhaps a more populated area, only 15 students on that 1 hour and 55-minute bus route. But every one of those 15 students is important to us, and we want to get them to school safely, on time, and home again. Our transportation expenditures last year were about $1,600,000, and our revenue for such was only $1,200,000. That leaves us with a revenue shortage of about $400,000. It does enable us most years to purchase one new bus, but with a fleet of 19 active bus routes, it's about a 20-year turnaround on a bus. Our buses, we work them hard, and the roads are often rutted and rocky and not always paved in many instances, and so we have some significant repairs on a regular basis in rural areas that also impact our bottom line. Finally, and I think perhaps most importantly, is we have a large impact with experiential learning opportunities in rural areas based upon distance. The nearest city, being Bemidji from Red Lake Nation, does offer a number of exciting opportunities at BSU, at the Sanford Center, at the Art Centers. We have some exciting opportunities. Unfortunately, at best, that's a 70-mile round-trip route. Our Ponema School is actually 35 miles north of the Red Lake School, where my offices are. So now we're looking at 140 miles round-trip for our young ladies, for example, on Tuesday nights who go to BSU to take advantage of Girls Who Code, a STEM computer program for them. And it's pretty darn important to those 20 girls, and it'll take a full bus to do it, and they come to school, you know, before 7 o'clock in the morning on the bus and don't get home till after 7 o'clock at night, and they love every minute of it. But the impact there you see in a rural area such as ours, where the population is sparse, there's a tremendous impact on our bottom line. So I appreciate your consideration and attention to this. I see it as an issue of equity, and I'm grateful for the privilege of speaking with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Lundquist. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 741? Question, Senator Klassen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, of the districts you've identified, do you own your own transportation systems, or have you outsourced that?
We own our own transportation
system. For the tape, if you could just restate your name.
Excuse me, Chair Wieger. Dr. Jim Hess, Superintendent Bemidji. We own our own transportation system. In District 31, we have approximately 80 route buses that go out every day, and we have a fleet of spare buses as well that we need to keep in reserve in case one of those buses has difficulty. It is a huge operation. Even today, a big challenge just finding enough drivers for our transportation system.
Excuse me, my name's Chris Line, and again, I want to add to the record so that my boss doesn't get in trouble. We do contract out 3 routes of our 80 routes. Otherwise, we own them all.
Primarily, you're good. You're good, Sue.
77 out of 80.
Gotcha.
You pretend like the
Thank you, Chris.
In Red Lake, it's a similar situation. I mentioned 19 routes, 19 regularly operational buses. We have another 10 buses, most of which are aging and used as spares and or for parts as needed. We have had to contract out for 3 routes this year, primarily because we couldn't fill positions with drivers to operate. We contracted with Bemidji Bus Lines. The price was almost identical to the cost for us to hire and operate with our own buses. The difficulties there, and I just calculate this, it's about $5 a mile. $5 a mile times this sort of mileage at a 1,000, over 1,000 square mile district. But we do contract out. Now, we do have a couple of those drivers back, so our contracted services with Bemidji Bus Line are minimal. But for the most part, we own our fleet as well.
Thank you. Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Saxhog. Just a question. One of the testifiers talked about the formula disconnect, and that's kind of what's causing the problem. And I think you're referring to about 5 school districts here. Does this formula disconnect affect other school districts similarly, and are they just not included in the bill, or are these the only 5 that are affected in this situation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Deems, these are the 5 schools that have the largest school districts that are affected. They're over 525 square miles. If you go down to 400, you will pick up probably another 7 or 8, most of them in northern Minnesota are working their way up too. But these are the 5 that are most outstanding. That's why.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. Yeah.
Thank you. Further questions? If not, Senator Saxhog, we'll entertain a motion to lay over for possible inclusion.
I sure will. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I move to recommend for possible inclusion, Senate File 741. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Thank you to the testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Saxhog. And finally, we have Senate File 995, Senator Clausen, concurrent education enrollment programs. We invite your testifiers to please join you at the table. Members, part of this, as we're planning, would need to go to higher ed, and we'll note that during several handouts. I don't believe we have any amendments, Senator Austin, or no, yeah. Maybe there's an A8. So
we will, Mr. Chair, we'd like to do that at the end, if we could.
We shall. So, Senator Clausen, Senate File 995.
Well, good morning, Chair Wieger and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 995, a proposal to support concurrent enrollment courses for Minnesota high schools. And several of you have heard this in the past during policy, so I will try to,
yes,
to cut through some information. But concurrent enrollment or dual credit programs allow college-ready high school students the opportunity to take post-secondary courses for high school and college credit. Concurrent enrollment courses are taught in high school by qualified high school teachers in conjunction with University of Minnesota and Minsky institutions. And Senate File 995 has 4 main objectives. The first is to provide adequate funding to support concurrent enrollment programs. Currently, the dollar amount is capped. Secondly, we want to expand the ability for both high schools and post-secondary institutions to participate. We currently have programs that are closed. They're full. Third, to provide greater opportunity for teacher staff development. And then lastly, to create greater governance and oversight for concurrent enrollment programs. Just a few kind of number facts about concurrent enrollment in Minnesota. We have over 23,000 students that participated in current enrollment courses in 2013. 16% of those students were from low-income families, which is a 41% increase over 6 years. 10% of the students were from minority populations, a 51% increase from 2007. And during the 2013-2014 school year, students earned over 208,000 credits in over 59,000 concurrent enrollment courses offered by local high schools in partnership with 27 University of Minnesota and Minsky institutions. So in looking at changes that have been made in Senate File 995 since our last hearing. If you look at Section 4, it requires post-secondary institutions offering concurrent enrollment programs and are members of the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnership, or NACEPT, to report student evaluation surveys to the Office of Higher Education, Department of Education, and the legislature. Post-secondary institutions that are not members of NACEPT are also required to conduct evaluation surveys and report results once again to the Office of Higher Education, Department of Ed, and the legislature. Section 5 requires post-secondary institutions offering concurrent enrollment programs to develop an advisory board to engage stakeholders in concurrent enrollment decisions. Section 6 requires post-secondary institutions to be accredited by the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnership by the 2020-2021 academic year. And then Section 7 stipulates concurrent enrollment advisory board membership and terms of that membership. You have a number of handouts. I would just like to turn your attention to those provided by the University of Minnesota College in the Schools program. The credit recognition document indicates the broad transferability of the credits earned, while the one-year and five-year student survey results reflect requirements found in Sections 4 of 6 of the bill that I've just reviewed. With that, I'd like to turn right away to our testifiers, and starting out with Julie Williams, Director of College in the Schools, the University of Minnesota, followed by Dr. Larry Lindblad from Central Lakes College in the Brainerd Lakes area.
Okay. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Julie Williams, and I'm the Director of College in the Schools at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I just wanted to speak in favor of the increased investment in concurrent enrollment that's part of this bill. And first, I think that it is going to strengthen Minnesota in four really important ways. The first one is that it is going to address a critical workforce issue. According to the State Demographer's Office, there are three trends in Minnesota that will have a significant impact on the state's economy. The first is that an increasing number of educated Minnesota workers are going to be retiring in the next 10 to 20 years. The young people that are rising to replace them include significantly greater proportions of immigrants and minority students. And the vast majority of jobs that are going to require some post-secondary education. In fact, the Georgetown Center for Education and the Workforce estimates that this will be true for 70% of the jobs in Minnesota, even as early as 2018. So we also know that along with these three trends, our K-16 education system has not been particularly successful with the diverse group of students that we need to engage in order to meet our workforce needs. National and regional research shows that dual credit programs can significantly address the opportunity and achievement gaps that exist in secondary and post-secondary institutions and that have the potential to negatively impact our economy. One of the handouts that I provided includes summaries of the studies showing the great benefits of dual credit, including concurrent enrollment, particularly for students of color, students from low-income families, and students who are first-generation college-bound. The second reason to support increased funding for concurrent enrollment is that it offers students with different learning styles and different family and ethnic backgrounds a reasonable chance of succeeding. One of your handouts shows how students fare on the high-stakes advanced placement tests compared to how they perform in U of M classes offered through CIS. My point in presenting this is not to disparage advanced placement, which I think is a great program, but it's simply to show that the U of M concurrent enrollment courses offer a higher chance of success for all students, but especially for those students that the state most needs to engage. The fact that most students are passing the U of M courses offered through CIS does not mean that the courses are easy or that the teachers are unprepared. The university is responsible for oversight of concurrent enrollment, and we have in place many practices that ensure equality. This includes faculty selection and preparation of the CIS teachers, requirements for ongoing university-led professional development for as long as the teacher is teaching with us, faculty visits to CIS classrooms, class size limits that match those on the university campus, and faculty review of grade distributions and student evaluations of their high school instructors. Accreditation through the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships also requires concurrent enrollment programs to use the same grading standards and types of student assessments that the sponsoring post-secondary institution uses. One important reason why more students do well in a course offered through CIS is that students demonstrate their mastery of course content over an entire term, and they are able to use a variety of different types of assessments. This is very different than AP, where college credit is awarded for a single score on a high-stakes test produced on an arbitrarily selected single moment in time. Researchers have found that how students fare on standardized tests can greatly influenced by a host of external factors, including stress over taking the test, amount of sleep, distractions at the testing site, time of day, and emotional state. The third reason to support a higher investment in concurrent enrollment is that it makes it possible for more Minnesota families to afford college tuition. This is another critical issue for Minnesota. According to the National Project on Student Debt, 70% of Minnesota college graduates in 2013 entered the labor force with student debt, and their average debt, nearly $31,000, was the fifth highest in the nation. The college credit that Minnesota high school students earned through concurrent enrollment last academic year were worth $55 million. U of M credits earned through CIS are widely transferable, as the handout about credit recognition will show you. Lastly, investing in concurrent enrollment programs strengthens Minnesota's teaching force. As I mentioned before, to meet the requirements of our accreditation, College in the Schools requires teachers to participate in regular university-led, discipline-specific professional development. The depth and breadth of their content knowledge, as well as their understanding of university expectations for student work, informs their teaching in all of their classes, not just the classes they teach for CIS. A school with a contingent of CIS teachers is a stronger school. So I urge your support for increased funding for concurrent enrollment because it addresses a critical workforce issue. It offers a greater chance of success for all students, but especially for those students we most need to engage. It makes it possible for more Minnesota families to afford college tuition, and it strengthens Minnesota's teaching force. Thank you.
Thank you. And a reminder, we have about 10 minutes.
Chair Wieger, members of the committee, I'm Larry Lundblad, president of Central Lakes College, and I'll condense my remarks here since several have already been covered. As you know, demand for options for high school juniors and seniors continues to increase. Morrison County record a couple weeks ago noted that 40 to 60% of juniors and seniors in Morrison County, high school juniors and seniors, are taking at least one PSEO concurrent class. Is as high as 70% in Long Prairie Gray Eagle. Concurrent classes are an important option for students in central Minnesota and in rural Minnesota, and we just heard about the impact that distances have on our regions, rural regions. Concurrent classes keep the students at the high school campus, eliminate travel time, and provide opportunities for low-income students. Travel of 20, 30, or 40 miles one way to attend PSEO classes at a college or university campus excludes students who have no car or who do not have money for gas. Another benefit, as we heard the representative from the university just to articulate, another benefit of concurrent courses is they prepare students for college. In addition to learning the content, students experience the rigor of a college course, learn time management skills, and college knowledge skills, how to register, access resources, and they become familiar with college admissions requirements. The research and concurrent outcomes is consistent. Concurrent students and concurrent students from underserved populations in particular have a higher degree of completion rates when they move on to college, and a higher percentage of them do after taking a concurrent course. CLC works closely with 30 regional high schools to provide concurrent courses. Last year, we had 1,800 students that took either PSEO or concurrent credits through Central Lakes College, and that provided a savings of $3.7 million to those students and their families. An important part of this legislation is to make sure that the concurrent courses are rigorous. At Central Lakes, our faculty collaborate with high school faculty throughout the semester. We have mandatory in-services each summer for all the faculty to get together and to look and review course syllabi and focus on teaching strategies. We do research in terms of success of our concurrent students. For the last 8 years, we have taken a look at GPAs. Concurrent students outperformed every other group in the study. We do assessments within the various disciplines. The English department, for example, assesses written work samples. Concurrent students are always perform at the top. Psychology department gives a common final to concurrent and on-campus students, and there's no significant difference between the two groups. Last year, 83% of the graduating high school seniors who took concurrent classes at CLC continued their education at a post-secondary institution, 792 out of 954 students. We had 75 students that graduated with their Associate of Arts degree as they graduated from high school. So we certainly support this bill. It's a solid piece of legislation. The increase in funding will allow more high schools to offer the concurrent enrollment option. It opens the doors to students interested in career and technical education options, provides resource for professional development, as we heard, and clearly establishes expectations for rigor that includes accreditation of the concurrent of the programs through the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships. I'd like to just conclude here quickly with two quick comments or feedback we got received from students. Kirsten, who was a concurrent enrollment student and graduated with 41 college credits, is now a junior at Concordia College. She writes, "The CIS program, which is our version of concurrent at Central Lakes, prepared me for the rigor of courses at Concordia. They were a stepping stone. The courses through CLC expanded my capacity for learning." Kyle, a current student, says, "It's important to me to prepare myself to be successful after my high school career. What better way to prepare myself than through concurrent enrollment courses?" Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go next testifiers.
Good morning, Chair Weger and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to testify at today's hearing. My name is Courtney Hum, and I'm a high school social studies, college, and the schools teacher at Community of Peace Academy, which is on the east side of St. Paul. We're a K-12 school. Concurrent enrollment is a fantastic opportunity for high school students and teachers and is a wonderful investment for the state of Minnesota. My school serves a very diverse student body. In addition, 85% of students at CPA qualify for free and reduced lunch, and the majority will be first-generation college students. During the 2013-14 school year, 73% of CPA juniors and seniors were enrolled in dual-credit courses through the University of Minnesota CIS program and PSEO program. Students are currently able to enroll in 5 CIS courses at CPA and countless PSEO classes at the universities around our community. These programs are instrumental in creating the college-going culture of our school. Teaching 2 CIS courses over the last 3 years has shown me the benefits of dual enrollment programs firsthand. Students are able to experience the rigor of a college class in a familiar setting and are able to save money and enter college with credits and are more likely to graduate and be college ready at graduation because of dual enrollment programs. One of the most important parts of dual enrollment programs is the fact that students are able to experience the rigor of a college class in a comfortable atmosphere with teachers and classmates they know and with whom they've already had classes. This personal relationship and knowledge of my students as learners allows me to support them as they experience college-level coursework for the first time. I'm able to both teach content and the essential reading strategies time management skills, and student advocacy skills that will help students be successful when they go to college. CIS gives students the ability to experience college coursework in a comfortable atmosphere, and these skills translate to making them more successful at college. CIS and PSEO allows all students, especially those from low-income families, an incredible opportunity to earn free college credit. Sending students who are first generation to college with credits saves students and families money and can also allow students to graduate from college earlier and with less debt. Additionally, dual enrollment options help ensure that students graduate and are college ready at graduation. Dual credit options such as the CIS program are a key factor to increasing graduation rates for all students and closing the graduation gap for traditionally underserved groups. CIS has shown students that their academic grit can pay off for them, allows them to increase their confidence with college-level coursework, and teaches them the skills they need to find success at college. The CIS program also benefits teachers. I'm part of a sociology and a political science cohort, both led by University of Minnesota professors with teachers from across the state. I meet with each cohort 3 times a year to discuss pedagogy and best practices in our disciplines. These meaningful professional development opportunities help me stay intellectually stimulated and engaged in teaching. These are the sorts of professional development activities that help teachers improve their practice over their years in the classroom. In conclusion, the Star Tribune recently reported that Minnesota's high school graduate has risen to 81%. While this is laudable, Minnesotans need more than a high school diploma to be successful. The concurrent enrollment bill works to prepare students to attain college success and gain the skills they need to enter the job market in Minnesota. For myriad reasons, I'm in strong support of SF 995 and for increased opportunities for high school students and teachers to participate in concurrent enrollment programs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And we have just about a minute left for testimony. This is going to be heard in higher ed finance again, and we have already heard the bill with our policy hat, so there's plenty of persuasion. But 1 minute, and then we're going to entertain a motion because we need to go into session.
Okay, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify at today's hearing. My name is Chal Tafase. I am an Ethiopian-born Minnesotan who attends Community of Peace Academy. I've taken 4 CIS classes in total, plus a PSEO class at St. Paul College. Altogether, that is 18 free college credits, adding up to over one semester of college. And that, to someone who lives with his elderly grandmother who is unable to work, is a great deal. Dual enrollment programs are valuable for students because they give students the opportunity to earn free college credits. The classes also allow students to challenge themselves, and students are more likely to be successful at college. For these reasons, I am strongly in favor of Bill SF-995. My first point in emphasizing the importance of CIS classes is the free college credit it grants students. Low-income students at my school and many more around St. Paul would benefit. These students receive free or reduced lunch, so those free credits they receive now will allow them to finish college sooner with lower debt, which in the end allows those wise students that chose to take those CIS classes to get a job quicker, and with the minimal amount of student loans, they will be able to impact our economy sooner. The second reason for why CIS classes should be funded is because it allows students to challenge themselves. If everyone in Minnesota was to challenge themselves and take a CIS class, it would affect the state as a whole. More students will go to college, and better, more minorities will. Students who are underrepresented in college communities will see that they have what it takes to be successful in college. Which brings me to my final point. CIS classes are a great way for students to prepare themselves for college. By taking these classes, they will not only see the difference between high school and college, but they will be able to understand the difference and know what to expect in college. In my own experience, I was able to realize the significance of study groups, taking notes on almost everything said, and how to communicate with a college professor. I was able to boost my own confidence and believe that one day I will one day be successful because of the work I am putting in now. In the future, I plan to major in biology, go to medical school, get my residency, and become a doctor, or major in English, then become a teacher and hopefully impact my future students and prepare them for college by teaching these same CIS classes. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for sharing your inspiring story. May your dreams come true. We have an author's amendment. It's the A8, Senator Klassen moves the A8 author's amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. We now have Senate File 995.
as amended before us, the author's amendment basically deleted some references to E-12 so it could travel to the Higher Ed Finance Committee. Right. So the motion that Senator Claussen moves is that File 995 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Claussen, thank you so much for all your work to the testifiers, and one more stop.
Okay.
And members, that concludes our business for today. The agenda for next meeting, which will be April 8th, is listed. There may be a couple of additions. We're also meeting the 9th and very possibly the 10th, and we'll have some additional announcements at that time. The meeting's adjourned. Yes. Can I come out?